The droids, however, will remain deactivated. Meaning? Meaning the lights and air circulators will be on, while the insane droids will be off. There don't seem to be any other beings about, and if there were, they'd be running right here to stop us.
The lights came back up and the screens flickered back on, but nothing else happened. Siv watched the door, waiting for Torben to call out or for some new threat to appear, but neither happened. Brendel clicked away until he found what he was looking for.
These records show that the only remaining supervisor is Dr. Kirig Rion, but that's all I can find. Does anyone see him on a screen somewhere?
I think I found him,
Gosta murmured. She stood in front of one of the screens.
On it, the remains of a man sat at a large desk, a blaster on the table before him.
Brendel glanced quickly and nodded.
That's what his nameplate says. So now we know what happened. The only thing worse than unsupervised people without a leader and a purpose is a bunch of droids in the same situation. I don't think there's anyone else here to challenge us.
But what are they doing?
Siv asked, pointing to the screen that showed the droids lined up perfectly in rows. Brendel walked over to look more closely.
It's almost as if they're worshipping something. See how their heads are bowed and their hands folded? Strange behavior.
They're creators,
Siv said softly, pointing to the wall behind TB3 where a huge Constar Mining Corporation logo was painted.
They just want their creators to come back.
Brendel shook his head.
This is why droids need routine maintenance. Their programming goes strange and they start to act...
human?
He gave her a sharp look.
Mad.
But they were kind to us. They healed you. They were only doing their jobs. And they were so happy to see us. Can't you turn them back on after we've left?
No,
Phasma said, moving to stand beside Siv.
We can't risk anything that could imperil the mission. They might disable the vehicles, lock the doors, or have access to weapons, Brendel agreed. It's better this way. Droids were never meant to be people. They're only meant to serve the purpose of their masters.
Siv couldn't help glancing at the troopers to see their reaction to their superior's words, but their expressions were concealed by their armor. When she looked to Gosta, the younger girl merely shook her head, clearly out of her depth. With Torben still outside, Siv was the only person who felt for the droids. With a stroke of a few keys, Brendel had effectively destroyed their civilization and wiped out their personalities and purposes. Even if they weren't people with feelings, it still seemed cruel.
When I am among your people, will I learn to operate these machines?
Phasma asked, pointing at the keyboard Brendel had used.
If you wish. I look forward to it, General Hux, Phasma said.
Although Siv couldn't see Phasma's face under her mask, she knew her leader was smiling. With the droids disabled, it didn't take them long to find the hangar. Brendel walked inside, moving from object to object, considering. The hulking shapes made little sense to Siv, but Brendel knew what he was looking for. Finally, he stood in front of a row of pointy metal machines.
These are speeder bikes, he said. And those big blocky ones with the turrets are ground assault vehicles, or GAVs. The speeders are made to fly over ground, and the GAVs were designed to move through sand or other rugged conditions. I would suggest my troopers take speeders as they're already trained, and they can scout ahead and behind us. The rest of us can ride in a GAV, which will also have room to carry our packs. What powers them? Phasma asked.
Brendel gave her a patronizing sort of smile.
That's very complicated, but the GAV is the only one we need to worry about. If the tank is full, it should get us as far as we need to go. We'll take another barrel of fuel with us, just in case. See here? It has a slot made for it. We only need to get to my ship, after all. Once we're there, the First Order will take care of everything else.
Always curious, Siv couldn't help exploring the enormous room while Brendel and his troopers prepared the vehicles. She found another set of lockers like the ones from the showers. They were unlocked, and some held folded clothes or polished boots, while others held weapons.
"We can take anything we want, can't we?"
Siv asked, amazed.
"These old clothes are useless," Phasma said, dumping a pile of fabric on the floor and picking up a short, smooth boot that wouldn't last a day on the Skyr's rocks. "Whatever these people did to survive clearly didn't work. We know we can count on our boots. We made them ourselves of leather, stitched them by hand with sinew. Who knows how long this thing will last, or if it will rip at the first jab of knife or claw."
"But if we're going to join Brendel's people, won't everything be like this?"
Siv held up a shirt so soft and fine that it felt like a light breeze would blow it away. Phasma shook her head.
"I was born for that armor. We've seen how strong it is. Balder's people didn't even make a dent during the fight. Things like this..."
She took the shirt from Siv and ripped it in half.
"Were never for me."
"So strange."
Siv walked down the row of lockers, running calloused fingers over the metal.
"Our ancestors used these things. Lived here. Worked here. Who knows if they came to Parnassos on purpose or were brought here unwillingly. They tried to make a life here. And then everything just fell apart."
Phasma pulled a blaster out of a bag and grinned.
"They weren't strong enough. We are. This planet is dying, but we will make a new life in the stars."
She handed another smaller blaster to Siv. Siv took the gun, noting the strange smoothness of the grip, how light and simple it seemed. This weapon could do more damage than both of Siv's blades, and from farther away. If not for the troopers' blasters, the Skin Wolves might have bested their entire group. Siv smiled.
"We just need a way to tie the blasters on, and we can find extra ones for Gosta and Torben."
Phasma opened all the lockers, tossing out their contents as if searching for something in particular. Siv sorted through them, collecting blasters and other items that seemed useful. Finally, Phasma held up her prize, a helmet. It wasn't much like the smooth, rounded stormtrooper helmets. Beat up and painted in bright colors, it had a black line across the eyes, another black line from the nose to the chin, and a tiny antenna poking up from the top. Phasma took off her mask and put it on, then reached for the matching heavy-duty gloves and a chest plate.
"Siv told me it was like watching a droid be assembled piece by piece."
Phasma began to look less and less like an animal and more like a trooper. Under that helmet, she could be anyone or no one. She didn't even seem human.
"There will be no stopping us now," Phasma said.
On Parnassos, 10 years ago. No matter how Brendel explained that they would ride inside the vehicle, Siv didn't understand how it could work until she was inside it and it was moving. Brendel sat in the front, working complicated levers and buttons with his hands and feet, while Phasma sat in the turret beside him, her blaster on her hip and her hand on the huge gun that swiveled around under a clear dome. Siv, Gosta, and Torben sat squashed together on a bench in back. The vehicle buzzed and thrummed up through her, making her teeth grind. She wrapped her fingers around the bench and hoped it would be over soon, or that they would at least be out under the sky instead of wedged between the smooth, unnatural walls of the building. Siv had complicated feelings about Terpsichore Station and the droids who had effectively died there, rendered silent and still by a few swipes of Brendel's thick fingers. They'd wiped out a civilization about the size of the Skyr, and neither Brendel nor Phasma had given it a moment's thought. Siv glanced at the troopers hovering on the speeder bikes. Thus far, they hadn't shared their real names or shown any sort of personality. Did Brendel's First Order care so little about basic humanity that they wanted their people, or at least their soldiers, as pliant and uniform as droids? How could Phasma so quickly adhere to this frame of mind? Recently, Siv had seen Phasma kill an ally, defy her brother, abandon the Skyre, and now this. Her leader wore a helmet and kept her plans to herself. Perhaps Phasma was changing, or perhaps she was merely showing her true nature for the first time. The hangar led to a smaller hallway, much like the ones they'd traversed on foot, but wide enough to accommodate their vehicle, or even three vehicles, abreast. Brendel's troopers zoomed alongside the Gav on their speeders, skimming over the ground without touching it. The hallway was very long and sloped up slightly, lit by the same cold, whitish-blue light that had plagued Siv ever since she'd entered the station. Up ahead, yet another smooth white wall stood in their way. Brendel stopped the vehicle, got out, and tapped on the pad until a door slid open. Siv didn't know what she was expecting. Day or night or yet more endless white. What she saw was a solid wall of gray sand that collapsed inward to reveal a bright point beyond. The sun. She shielded her eyes as Brendel climbed back into the vehicle and set it in motion. The wheels caught and dug in, spinning uphill until they caught Furchus. Rumbling up out of the hole, they emerged in the middle of the gray desert, the Gav's wheels churning and spitting out a plume of sand. The troopers on their speeders burst out of the hole and flew over the sand as swiftly as diving seabirds. Once the Gav was free, it found some speed, but Phasma called out for Brendel to stop. "We don't know which direction we're going," she said. He obligingly halted the vehicle, and she climbed down from the turret and walked a few steps away, looking at the sun and the area around them. There was no telling where they'd been when TB3 had found them, nor where Terpsichore Station was by comparison. Most of the compound was buried under sand, round humps of white shining through and disappearing again as the wind swirled around it. Siv shivered, knowing they'd been underground all along.
"We were headed north before," Brendel said.
Phasma slowly turned, the wind whipping the feathers and fur around her collar. It felt strange, Siv thought, to see her leader in a smooth helmet instead of her fierce, rust-red mask. Siv wondered if the others knew her own lichen-green mask better than her face, as she sometimes felt about them. Torben was Torben. But when he wore his white mask with its black slashes and stylized horns, he became a brutal monster. Gosta was Gosta, but her dark gray mask disappeared in the night, making her seem almost a nimble shadow with huge white eyes. It was funny how wearing their masks hid their faces, and yet somehow made them more themselves. The helmet only made Phasma seem more like a machine. As she wandered around outside, Gosta's fingers sought Siv's where they wrapped around the edge of the seat.
"We're so far from home," the girl said,
her voice going high and reminding Siv of how very young she still was. Siv smiled, although Gosta couldn't see it under her mask.
"But we're closer to our new home in the sky. I feel like I liked it in there. Is that wrong?"
Torben leaned over, his terrifying mask at odds with his gentle voice.
"It is normal for the bird to love captivity," he said, "at least until it longs to fly again."
"What's that mean?"
"I don't know. But my mother used to say it quite a bit when I told her I wanted to stay in the Nautilus forever. It was open for a whole week at a time still when I was little."
Gosta looked down, pouting.
"The Constar food was nice."
"The food was easy. Doesn't mean it was good for you."
Torben handed her a bit of jerky.
"This stuff's better for your teeth and your gut. Soft food makes for soft people."
As Gosta took the food with thanks, Phasma got back in the vehicle and pointed.
"We need to go that way."
"Which direction is that?" Brendel asked.
"The right one."
"And how did you calculate that?"
"She just knows," Siv said.
"You don't know where we are, and you haven't seen the smoke in days. Are you sure?"
Phasma leaned down from the turret, her leathers creaking. She pulled off her helmet and pinned Brendel with her glare.
I would stake my life on it. I am staking my life on it. If you want to find your ship and your people, we go this way. If you want to die on Parnassus, choose your own direction.
Brendel considered it, chewing his lip for just a moment, unsure. He now wore a thick jacket with a furred hood Phasma had brought from the storage room, as well as Gosta's old pair of goggles. If another skin wolf went for him, at least he'd have some protection. For the first time, he wore a thick line of oracle salve over each cheek. Siv considered warning him to cover the rest of his skin before he got burned, but she didn't want Brendel Hux to give her that stare of his, the one that suggested he had just added someone's name to an enemy's list.
Well then, he said, we'll go your way.
But the way he said it suggested that he considered it a losing bet, and if things went wrong, Phasma would suffer. In truth, if she was wrong, they would all suffer and die. Both hands on the wheel, Brendel turned the vehicle in the direction the Skyre warrior had indicated. Phasma put her helmet back on and climbed back into the turret, and the next leg of their journey began. On the Absolution.
Why did you stop?
Cardinal asks. He's been staring at her so intently that Vine knows she's doing a good job. However he feels about Phasma, he's just as fascinated by her story as Vi is.
Because my throat is as dry as the gray sands of Parnassus.
She licks her parched lips and for just a moment lets the pounding headache subsume her. Lets Cardinal see what very bad shape she's in. The stims help, but they also make her muscles more tense, and she can't stop the trembling. Frustration written in every line of his face, Cardinal holds out the drink, and she lips the straw and drinks deeply. She wonders briefly if the water might contain sedatives or some other First Order special edition. Not that it would stop her from drinking. But considering the needs of an entire ship this big, hundreds of thousands of people, surely the water contains vitamins and nutrients, probably medicines. A little boost to morale, a little softening of the chemicals to keep alert brains from coming fully awake and rioting. Or worse, questioning. Vi knows more than a little about how the new breed of stormtroopers are trained, and not the part where Cardinal teaches them how to wield weapons, as friendly to the children as a favorite uncle. No. The young recruits are plugged into their beds like data pads downloading new information. Gentle, droning voices at night fill their heads with sayings, propaganda, warnings, reminders that the First Order is the only answer, the only way to save the galaxy from itself, from destruction. Armitage Hux grew up at the Imperial Academy on Arcanus, watching his father deliver, manipulate, and program children to become killing machines. But Armitage has gone even further with his sharp theoretical knowledge of battle, crafting complex simulations that realistically replicate every aspect of combat. The children lose all sense of individuality, of self. They're never allowed to play, discouraged from laughter or frivolity or creativity outside of how those emotions or urges can be used to win war games. But Cardinal is fine with all that. He's a product of that system. She's not going to flip him by attacking the heart of who he is and what he stands for. No, she's got to keep drawing the story out, showing him who Phasma really is while buying herself enough time to escape in case he doesn't eventually see her point of view. The droid beeps, reminding them both of the task at hand.
Go on, he says. We're running out of time.
Don't you know a story can't be rushed?
She teases, but tiredly.
I know the truth doesn't take nearly as long as a lie.
Vi laughs, or tries to. It ends up as a cough. He allows her another sip of water.
Sometimes the truth takes a while. Much like Parnassus, it doesn't care about you.
Cardinal picks up the remote, and Vi can't stop herself from flinching.
Then care about this remote, he says.
because Phasma will be on this ship soon, and I will have what I need before she gets here. Or else you and your brother, Baako, will have bigger problems than a little shock.
21. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. The vehicles emerged from the compound in the afternoon, which gave them several hours of light to navigate by. Not that there was much to navigate. The sand was as gray and endless as ever, although there were some smaller dunes, almost like a giant body covered in a sheet, curving up here and there. As the sun set, a dark shape rose along the horizon, too far off for anyone to guess what it might be. Another compound? Another dead beast? One of those destroyed cities Brendel had mentioned seeing as his ship went down. There was no telling. Brendel stopped the vehicle on top of one of the small dunes. When Phasma's helmet turned to glare at him, he shrugged.
Riding the speeders at night isn't safe for my troops. We'll stop here and rest until dawn. Whatever that is up ahead, I've a feeling we'd rather face it in the light of day.
And if it decides to come for us first?
Brendel gave her a level, weighing stare.
You're a warrior. You'll do what you need to do.
Phasma didn't reply, but her silence always spoke volumes. Siv knew well enough that Phasma would have kept going until the vehicle died, then walked the rest of the way. It was odd, seeing her proud leader bend to the will of another, especially one who would obviously lose should the two enter any sort of combat. It had to be like the arrangement Phasma had with her brother, Keldo, Siv reasoned. So long as it served her, Phasma recognized and yielded to a cannier mind, or at least one that fulfilled a purpose hers couldn't. They'd brought supplies from the Terpsichore station lockers, neatly packed tents and metallic blankets that held heat and protected the sleeper from sand, and, hopefully, beetles. As they arranged their pallets in a circle formed of the speeders and the hulking vehicle, Siv settled her blanket close to Torben. It always made her feel safer being near his big, comfortable bulk.
What if there are more droids?
Gosta asked.
Or what if the old ones wake back up?
Don't be ridiculous, Brendel said, although she hadn't directly asked him in particular. Droids can't reactivate themselves any more than a dead person can get up and start walking around. Terpsichore Station is, for all conclusive purposes, lost.
But there could be other stations, Siv said, and Gosta gave her a thankful smile. Phasma regarded her warriors, her helmet close to her side on the ground.
We could spend all night talking about the things that we fear may come to pass, but I'd rather eat and sleep. If something is coming, we'll fight it, but there's no point in inviting trouble. Life here is no more dangerous than it was in the Skya. It's simply a different kind of danger.
It does take getting used to,
Torben admitted.
All the sand? Endless nothing? Shifting? Blowing? Itching? At least on the rocks you know where you stand. Nice solid things, rocks.
No one could argue his point. For a man of more muscle than brain, he sometimes made much sense. Siv pulled food and water out of her pack, settling in between Torben and Gosta as the troopers kept their own company in the other large tent. The structures were open on the sides, but they provided a little shelter from the constant howling of the wind. The metallic plastic flapped with each gust, but the stakes were planted deeply, thanks to yet another skill demonstrated by the troopers. Phasma and Brendel went to the vehicle, silent but secretive, and Siv wondered if perhaps they were finding comfort in each other. Phasma had not mated among the Skyre, at least not as far as Siv knew, and there was little chance for privacy among the rocks. Thinking about better times, she leaned against Torbin's shoulder as she chewed on her jerky. That night, blessedly, nothing terrible happened. It was a rare enough thing anywhere on Parnassus. The next morning, they woke up to a day that was already sizzling at dawn. The dark shape on the horizon had neither moved nor changed, and they all watched it as they sipped water and chewed their breakfast. They made good progress, thanks to the vehicles, and Siv had grown accustomed to rolling with the machine's movement. The monotony of the sand was a strange thing, and as they got closer and closer to the dark blot, it grew bigger and bigger. So big that it was clear it wasn't one beast or one building, but the thing Brendel called a city.
On most habitable planets, beings gather in large groups to live together, build domiciles, and share resources, he explained. Some planets are nothing but buildings and cities. Others have enclaves, capitals, towns, villages.
What is this one?
Phasma asked, staring through her quadnox. Brendel stopped the vehicle, held out one hand and wiggled his fingers, and Phasma put the quadnox in his palm. He frowned as he looked back and forth, left to right.
A city, but a primitive one. What worries me is that bit in the middle, standing high over everything else.
What's so bad about that?
Gosta asked. Brendel pulled down the quadnox to stare at the girl disdainfully.
When everything is at one level except for one building, that generally means one of two things, neither one good. The first possibility is a church, representing a religion that seeks to reach some silly god in the sky, and the second is a king or despot, desperate to maintain his holdings. Either way, you've got someone with resources who thinks they're superior to the people they rule. There is no greater enemy to justice than a little king on a little hill.
Phasma wordlessly reached for the quadnox and looked again as she chewed her jerky.
Does your First Order not seek to rule, then? Yet you seem to be opposed to ruling.
Brendel grunted.
There is a difference. The First Order wishes to bring equality to all and destroy the petty politics and rotten bureaucracy that plague the galaxy. I speak of an enlightened government of thousands of people working on behalf of billions of unenlightened people. In a place like this, however, the decisions are being made by one person only, or perhaps a small handful of wealthy despots. And their first interest is in lining their own pockets and maintaining their golden lifestyles.
Siv watched him silently. Something told her that Brendel was either concealing some truth or directly lying, but she wasn't about to challenge him. His words were too pretty, his stated motives too pure. Even though Siv couldn't read Phasma's face through her helmet, she could tell her leader likewise was not convinced.
And so what does the First Order do with such little kings?
Phasma asked. Brendel stared over the sand as if he could see straight to the heart of the city.
We destroy them, he answered.
Phasma put down her quadnox. The way she looked from each member of her party, to their gear, then back to the city beyond, told Siv that she was making plans. Her warriors were familiar with this look, as it generally signaled a new strategy.
We need to go around it,
she finally said.
Way around it. We have all the supplies we require. Whoever lives there will only keep us from our goals.
May I see?
Siv held out her hand for the quadnox. Phasma gave her the nox, along with a sharp nod that suggested any questions she had had better be intelligent. Siv often helped Phasma with her plans, and only participated in the discussion when she was sure her ideas were good. This time she looked, and what the quadnox revealed was startling.
What's all the green? She asked.
Because green was everywhere, and not the dusty green of lichen, but a vibrant and poisonous green. To the naked eye, the city appeared like a wavering black smudge, but the nox showed green walls outside, green buildings inside, more green than Siv had ever seen in her entire life, which had heretofore included only the green lines in Terpsichore Station, a few people's eyes, and some ancient artifacts and gems hidden in the Nautilus. The greenest things in the skyer were grayish mosses and sea veg on the verge of black.
Green means plants.
Brendel drank his water, more than a skyer would, and wiped the excess from his mouth as if it were unimportant.
They call it an oasis, a green place in the middle of the desert. There's usually an underground spring, or perhaps the pool where a river ends. Sometimes those who wander in the desert too long imagine such a place and stumble to their death, chasing a shimmering dream that isn't really there.
But it's there.
It is, yes.
They must be very rich, Gosta said. With that much water?
Phasma scoffed.
Who cares about their riches? Everything we need is in Brendel's ship, and getting there before anyone else can is our first priority. What do we want with some green city? It's still on Parnassus. The planet is still dying. Nothing else good has lasted here. Within 10 years, even that spring will dry up, and the plants will wither and die, the people along with them. That city is nothing but a corpse that doesn't know it's dead yet.
Torben put a hand up to his mask to shield his eyes from the sun.
Left or right, then?
Left, Brendel said. Just as Phasma said.
Right.
The hot air grew tense. No one said anything. The troopers hovered nearby on their speeder bikes, gently drifting back and forth.
Why do you think left?
Phasma asked.
Because of our angle in relation to the city. It seems a slightly shorter route.
I say right because we won't have to correct so far to reach your ship.
The troopers must have sensed the disturbance as they rode their speeders closer, their hands on their blasters. Torben exhaled and adjusted the weapons at his hips. Gosta had hopped off the vehicle to stand, and her fingers danced over her new blaster, her eyes unwavering on Phasma.
Splitting up is a bad idea, Siv ventured.
Phasma didn't move a muscle. Even with her mask, it was clear she was staring at the city, her sharp mind considering every gambit.
Left, then,
Phasma said. The Skyr folk relaxed, but Siv was stunned. She and Torben locked eyes, and she shrugged. They'd never seen their leader give in so easily, not even to Keldo. Still, they knew better than to question her. Once she'd made her proclamation in that voice, you went with her or you were left behind. And being left behind here meant certain death.
Let's be off, then,
Brendel said, and he did sound satisfied. No one else had left the vehicle, but Gosta seemed reluctant to get back in. The girl seemed fascinated and charmed by the speeder bikes, or possibly by the troopers who rode them. Phasma noticed Gosta skulking closer to the speeder and called to her.
Gosta! Pull your weight!
I was wondering if it would be possible for me to ride on the speeder with Ellie,
Gosta said, trying to sound brave and bold.
It would be good if another one of us knew how to ride, in case we lose someone.
Phasma again looked to Brendel.
I have no quarrel with the idea, he said.
Although the girl can't simply make up silly nicknames as if my troopers are pets.
She's correct, though. We must plan on losing people. It's a long journey yet. LE-2003 can teach the girl. Let's take a break before we continue.
As Siv distributed sips of water and strips of meat, she surreptitiously watched the youngest Skyr warrior interact with Ellie. Siv had taken little notice of the troopers, except for the rare times they removed their helmets and their brief stay in the Khonstar mining facility. They seemed completely identical, other than very slight expressions of build or height. They mostly kept themselves, and Brendel frowned on them showing too much personality or being too casual in their manners. Still, Ellie didn't seem terrible, and she was pointing to parts of the speeder bike as Gosta, grinning like a fool, straddled the seat. Siv's mother had told her stories of her own childhood, and a big feature had been that children had once had freedom to play and time to do nothing. In the Skyr these days, everyone worked from the moment they were able, even if the only work was flapping a stick at birds to keep them away from drying meat or sea veg, a job Frey had done as a toddler, strapped into a net harness securely hung from the rocks. Siv realized she'd never seen Gosta smile like this before, her expression open and unguarded, and her eyes alight. Putting a hand to her belly, Siv lifted up a prayer that they would get to Brendel's ship alive and intact. She'd told no one her own secret yet, as most children ended in blood before they began. But she had more reason than most to wish for miracle transport off the tomb Parnassus was swiftly becoming. As they finished their meal, the Skyr folk paused to watch Gosta take her first short trip on the speeder bike, zooming over the dunes and laughing with joy. It was a lovely moment, and one Siv still treasures, especially after what happened later.
"We haven't got all day,"
Brendel barked, and they peeled their eyes away from the spectacle and climbed into the vehicle to continue their trip around the Green City. They'd taken turns sitting in the turret by the passenger seat, which was mounted with the heaviest gun Siv had seen yet, something that Brendel called disturbingly destructive. So far they hadn't used it, but he had tested it briefly, and the way it spit fire into the sand was impressive. When they'd gone out to see the damage, it had been a good 5 minutes' walk to the scorch marks, where they'd dug up twisted lightning bolts of cloudy gray glass. Brendel explained that the laser was so hot that it had melted the sand, and Phasma had taken more turns in the turret than anyone else despite the heat caused by its protective overhead dome. She rode there now, her helmet on and her hand wrapped around the massive gun's grip. When Siv looked to her leader, she felt reassured that they would accomplish their goal. Hope was a new feeling for her, and without Gosta in the back seat, she took the chance to curl her fingers around Torben's and lean her head against the reassuring warmth of his shoulder. Feeling safe was also unusual, and she wanted to enjoy it for as long as she could. Brendel steered left to give the city a wide berth. Phasma made no further comment, merely swung her gun around to face the nearing green wall. Siv didn't like the look of the plants, which the Quadnox showed to be long vines twisting with wide green leaves and peppered with tiny pink flowers. Two of the speeder bikes zoomed ahead, keeping point at the front left and right of the Gav, but with plenty of room between them. The last speeder stayed in back, protecting them from the rear. As Siv watched Gosta's hair fly out behind her, the girl's arms wrapped around Ellie's middle as they caromed over the gray sand, something caught her attention just ahead of the speeders. She didn't know what it was. Couldn't identify what made her call out.
"Stop! That thing..."
Brendel had just started to bark.
"What?"
When Ellie's speeder tipped, nose first, and disappeared into the sand, throwing the trooper and Gosta into the air.
PT-2445, pull up!
Brendel shouted into the comm on his wrist as he braked the Gav hard, sending up a shower of sand when it slid to a halt. The remaining speeder bike skidded sideways and spun to a stop, Pete's boots landing on the ground in a puff of gray. He immediately leapt off the speeder and ran for where Ellie was sprawled in the sand. Before he could reach her, he disappeared completely.
PT-2445, report!
There's a ditch, sir, full of spikes. I fell between them, luckily. Didn't break anything. LE-2003's speeder is down here along with... damn, dozens of vehicles. And bodies. Old bones on the spikes.
HF-0518, you heard him. Move ahead with caution. Get PT-2445 out of that ditch.
Phasma dropped down out of the turret.
Siv, take the gun. I'm going to get Gosta.
Siv nodded and climbed up. A wave of heat swept over her from the plastic bubble, but she ignored it as she scrambled into the seat and scanned the area where Ellie and Gosta had fallen. Gosta was sitting up now, her mask off, rubbing a bloody place in her hair and looking confused.
I'm going with Phasma,
Torben said. Phasma bounded down from the Gav, a blaster in one hand and her axe in the other. Torben followed her, his club and axe ready, as if he'd completely forgotten the blaster in a holster at his belt. Brendel sat behind the wheel, Siv noted, and although he barked commands into his wrist comm, he didn't so much as put a hand on his door. As she gripped the gun in trembling hands and tried to focus on her people through the haze of heat and sand, something flashed in the clear, shiny plastic overhead. By the time she'd spun around in the turret, it was too late.
Brendel, we're being attacked from behind.
She couldn't see what was happening with Phasma, but Torben told her about it later. Phasma ran to the ditch and leapt over it, barely making it across, and scrabbling out on the other side in the slippery sand.
When Torben tried to follow her, he wasn't able to complete the jump. He was big and bulky, and Phasma was lighter and faster. He tumbled down into the sand, sliding between the spikes and landing among the bones and rusted metal hulks of ancient vehicles. When he spotted Pete reaching out of the pit toward Huff's outstretched glove, Torben ran and boosted Pete up so he could clamber out. But when Torben held up his own hand for help out of the trench, the stormtroopers had already left. He was alone in the pit, which was too deep for him to climb out of without aid.
Phasma!
Torben called.
I'm trapped down here. Is Gosta safe?
Minor head wound,
Phasma called back.
She'll live. Is there anything down there that you can use to get out?
Torben shielded his eyes and scouted around.
Their speeder bike. It's still a little floaty.
So ride it out.
It's not that floaty.
Lift it up to me, then.
Phasma appeared at the other side of the ditch, and Torben obligingly hefted the speeder until its pointy nose hovered within Phasma's reach.
We need to make a bridge out of it.
Together, they maneuvered the hobbled speeder so that it spanned the pit, the nose on one side and the rear on the other.
Support it from the bottom while I take her across,
Phasma said, for the ditch went so far in either direction that she couldn't just go around it. The trap was meant to catch everything that came near, but they learned more about that later. Torben knew his role. He was the muscle. He'd been trained from birth to maximize his strengths to help his people. So he moved to the belly of the speeder and held it steady, supporting it from below.
Ready?
Phasma asked.
What, you want to wait a while?
As he held up the speeder bike, Phasma appeared at the edge with a now unconscious Gosta draped over her arms, the girl's head bleeding freely. Torben strained to hold the speeder steady as Phasma ran across it with what Siv called superhuman agility, carrying the younger girl. Once Phasma was across, she stopped.
Now use the speeder bike to climb out on this side. I have to get her to safety.
She looked toward the Gav and went stiff.
We're under attack. Hurry!
And then she was gone. Torben did as she'd commanded, heaving half of the speeder bike against the side of the pit like a ladder and climbing up it to get out. When he landed on the surface above, he heard the ongoing battle and pushed to his feet, racing back to where Siv was fighting. As for Siv, she finally got to feel the destructive power of the Gav's gun. The attacking force comprised several Gavs just like theirs, each one branded with the same Constar Mining Corporation logo. But the vehicles had been embellished with spikes and chains, turned from simple surveying machines into fighting monsters, much as the Skyr warriors transformed themselves into beasts with claws and feathers. Siv managed to hit the first Gav in the approaching line, and it flew into the air, flipping several times before landing in a spectacular explosion. But before she could cheer, she felt the entire Gav around her rock from an enemy hit. Her hand slipped from the gun, and her head knocked against the plastic bubble, stunning her.
Hold on.
That was Brendel. He put their Gav into gear, turned a sharp left, and floored it. Siv's turrets spun around, and she struggled to stay focused and figure out where to point the gun. She soon realized that Brendel wasn't going to help any of their people. He was making a sharper left into the desert, speeding away from the city and the ditch. He didn't calm his people, didn't attempt to fight, didn't try to save anyone. He just ran. The other vehicles gave pursuit, and although Siv aimed her gun and pulled the trigger, she didn't see the same success as her first hit. The turret jiggled her everywhere, and she was starting to feel sick to her stomach. She lost track of Torben and Phasma. One of the attacking vehicles ran over a speeder bike, breaking it like a child's toy. We have to go back, she shouted. They need us! We'll lose them all!
Wrong. We have to get away. To my ship. We can't help them now.
Siv roared her anger. This was not how life was lived in the Skyr. Every body was necessary. Every person had a particular job. What a different place Brendel must have been from if he was willing to abandon his people and run for his life. And what a conscience he must have possessed to know he could live with such a decision and just go on with his days instead of being crushed by shame and regret. Even in her condition, even knowing how badly they were overpowered, Siv almost scrambled down from the turret and leapt from the Gav to hurry back to Torben and Phasma and Gosta. But she didn't get a chance. The vehicle suddenly slammed to a stop in a huge burst of sand.
What happened?
We hit something.
At that, Siv did hurry down, and the moment she was in the passenger seat, she found a ragged spear point firmly held in front of her face.
Brendel had his hands up, so she put her hands up too. The attackers were strange, clad only in colorful, finely woven clothes like the ones the Skyr folk kept stored in the Nautilus as sacred relics. No armor, no masks. But every centimeter of skin was covered by cloth, down to thin gloves on their hands. Their heads were wrapped in long swaths of the vibrant fabrics, only their eyes showing.
Get out! Don't try anything,
the one she assumed was the leader said. His words had a strange accent, but it was closer to what she was used to than the way Brendel spoke.
We already have your other people, so don't bother trying to be heroes. Yet.
It was a baffling thing to say, but Siv didn't have time to consider it. Someone opened her door, and she slid down from the Gav, landing in a puff of sand. They slapped battered plastic binders on her wrists and searched her to remove all her weapons. On the other side of the vehicle, Brendel was undergoing the same treatment, his face red with growing fury. Two more groups of brightly dressed strangers joined them, bringing Pete and Huff in chains, seemingly unharmed, and dragging an unconscious Ellie.
And the others?
The leader asked one of his people.
Still fighting.
Are they winning?
The woman chuckled.
They will. We always do.
Aratu!
The leader shouted, shaking his spear and howling at the sky.
Aratu!
The others answered, taking up the manic shriek. Brendel looked beyond disgusted.
Madness,
he muttered.
Shall we watch then?
The leader asked his people. The only answer was another cheer. Siv was roughly turned with the others to face a wide spread of sand. Phasma and Torben were fighting back to back, Gosta's prone body on the sand between them. Phasma had her blaster in one hand and her axe in the other, and judging by the colorful, unmoving lumps in the sand, she'd already taken down two fighters on her side of the field. Torben twirled his axe and spiked club and had three bodies littering his side. As Siv watched, Phasma winged one of her attackers in the arm with a blaster bolt, then spun and caught him across the chest with her blade, kicking him in the stomach as he fell. The ring of attackers stepped back, uncertain. Torben roared, and Siv knew what would come next, and smiled to herself. With a fatal weapon in each hand, he ran into the circle of assailants and spun with an elegant grace no one would have expected from so big a man, hacking bodies across the gut and leaving a circle of blood. The sand bubbled up with a volcano of beetles, and Siv cried, "Torben, back away!" When Torben looked up at her, his face stricken, that's when they got him. The attackers threw a net over him, pinning him to the ground. As he stood to toss it off, someone jerked it, and it narrowed around his ankles, tripping him. The leader, standing between Siv and Brendel, laughed heartily.
"Even the mighty fall before the will of Aratu,"
he bellowed. Phasma was the only one still up, and she hadn't slowed her assault. She'd wing one of the assailants with her blaster, then hit them somewhere mortal while they were still in shock. Looking around, Siv realized that these people weren't really fighting or using their blasters. They all carried guns, and they had the huge weapons mounted on the Gavs, but they seemed more interested in watching the show than protecting one another. This, then, wasn't an attack or raid like one of Baldur's, not a risky bid trading lives for resources. Whoever these people were, they wanted bodies. People. Even Great Torben, who had killed so many of them, hadn't been harmed or punished.
And yet they didn't seem to mind watching their own people die, and thus far had lost at least a dozen, for all that they had 50 more just standing around watching.
What do you want with us? Siv asked the leader.
Wait and see, little sand flea, he said. For now, let's watch this show.
Phasma's fight was valiant, extraordinary, and bloody. She used the blaster like she'd been born with one in her hand, showing unerring aim, even without the ability to stop and carefully focus her shots. She was adept at maiming an enemy, and then perfectly timing the killing shot. One of the men went down in two pieces, bisected across the stomach, and much to Siv's surprise, the leader behind her just laughed his booming laugh.
Justinian was always a bit tall, wasn't he?
He shouted. The more Siv watched, the more disgusted she became. Whatever these people wanted, it wasn't as pure and true as what the Skyr wanted. They weren't fighting to live, to eat, to hold on to vital land. They weren't fighting to defend their elderly and young from attackers. They seemed to be fighting for entertainment only. A vile blasphemy to Siv's mind.
I grow bored, the leader said. Tell Ceylon to end it.
The woman he'd spoken to nodded and darted off across the sand on huge, wide shoes that kicked up puffs of gray. Whatever she said when she reached the clot of people circling Phasma had the desired effect. A big man split off from the group and held up a long spear which crackled with what looked like lightning. As three other assailants taunted Phasma from the other side, he casually poked her with the spear, and crackles of electricity wreathed her body and helmet. Phasma went stiff and fell over backwards, flopping on the ground, her body rigid and slightly smoking.
Package them up and let's hurry home before the next storm. The Aratu will be pleased.
The leader walked calmly to a gav and took his seat, while the rest of the group poked, prodded, and hurried along the captives. When Phasma stopped sparking, Ceylon threw another net over her, dragged her away, and hefted her into a gav, tossing her fallen helmet in behind her. Brendel and Siv were kept together, ushered into a spike-covered gav that smelled of strange spices.
See?
Brendel whispered to Siv as she watched Torben, now out of his net and forced to carry Gosta. The girl was still unconscious, and Torben draped her across the back seat of another gav.
I told you. Whatever the Aratu is, it will live in the highest building, and whatever it wants will cost us more than we're willing to give. You can bet on that.
Siv didn't like Brendel Hux, and she didn't trust him, but she suspected that on this occasion, he was right. She wasn't looking forward to finding out what the Aratu really was. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. Riding in the enemy's gav, Siv quickly began to feel ill. Instead of driving relatively straight as Brendel had, the driver swerved this way and that and plunged up and down the small dunes like he had a death wish. Her stomach roiled, and she realized this was farther than she'd ever been from another Skyr member. The band was a family, and she was stuck here with Brendel Hux, who was hunched down as far from her on the seat as he could get, sulky and glaring. At first, Siv felt as if she were getting feverish, her skin alternating from hot to cold. But then she realized that the sky was growing dark. When a storm came to the Skyr, everyone quickly found a stable place to ride it out, making sure their lines were hitched to steady spikes, as the oil-slick rains and buffeting winds could easily knock a person off a rock spire. On the best days, they huddled in the Nautilus, in the corners away from the hole in the ceiling that gushed toxic rain, even when they put a woven cap over it. On the worst days, the Nautilus was full of raging water, and they hunkered down in the miserable, stinging, sputtering rain with no cover and no way to avoid random lightning strikes and cruel, cutting winds. Siv and Torben had a rock they liked, a bigger sort of spire that could almost hold them both comfortably as they huddled under a protective hide. But this storm was strange. The air didn't feel heavy and wet and thick. It felt hot and sucking and sparking, and when the leader, now driving Brendel's old Gav, shouted something into the wind, Siv's driver accelerated even harder, making her put a hand over her mouth under the mask to keep the sick in and the sand out. It wasn't long before they were approaching the city head-on, and Siv had trouble grasping how very large it was. Bigger than the Skyre and Claw territories put together. Bigger than Terpsichore Station. The wall had to be the height of 10 people, and was solidly covered in those dangerous-looking plants. Just when Siv was sure they were going to splatter against it, a door slid open, just wide enough to allow the Gav's entry. Although the wall had appeared entirely solid from the outside, apparently the vines hid their own secrets. Once they were inside, the city was beyond overwhelming for a woman who had only ever known perhaps 100 people by name in her entire life. It was so crowded with people hurrying to and fro that one of their brightly clad captors had to get out of Siv's Gav and shove people out of the way with a long, colorful stick covered in bells, calling, "Clear the streets! The Aratu's orders!" The people were of all ages, some so old that Siv was fascinated by their stooped bodies, wrinkles, and gray hair. In the Skyre, few people lived past 35. But like the Skyre, this place had few babies or small children. The majority of the population seemed to be in their older teens and 20s, the strongest and most robust ages. The next thing she noticed was that the people seemed to be of two different sorts, gaunt and raggedly dressed, or large and decked out in swathes of vibrant fabric and layers of gold jewelry. She'd never seen bodies carrying so much extra flesh, and it did not escape her that the larger and wealthier folk seemed far happier than their skinny neighbors. Everyone was running to shelter, glancing up worriedly at the darkening sky. When Siv looked to Brendel, a question in her eyes, he shook his head disapprovingly. "I told you, the people who live up high have too much, and the people who scrape in the dirt are starving. Overindulgence and suffering with no in-between, no thought for the city's welfare. This world needs the First Order."
"What can be done for them?" Siv asked.
Brendel raised a feathery red eyebrow.
"They must be ruled by someone with a firmer hand."
But he didn't go into any further detail, and one of the captors poked him with a stick.
"Don't be talking like that where the rats can hear you," she murmured. "You won't last long, making threats like that."
Brendel looked at the woman, whose face was baked a beautiful sandy brown that Siv had never seen before. She had pulled down the cloth that had previously covered her nose and mouth, and her light gray eyes were lined in deep black.
"What's to be done with us?" Brendel asked her.
She gave an elegant shrug.
"Not mine to say."
"But we're not guests."
The woman smiled, showing dimples.
"Oh, no. You'd have to earn that first."
The driver grunted.
"Hush. Don't give them ideas."
And then their captors went silent, which was disconcerting. Although Siv was accustomed to enemies, they'd always struck violently, never wasting time and resources on adult captives whose hearts couldn't be turned as a child's could. Whatever these people wanted from them, well, Brendel was right. Siv didn't want to give it. To take her mind off her concerns, she turned her attention to the wonders of the city. Since the Nautilus held so many artifacts, and since she'd spent time at Terpsichore Station, Siv knew a little more about the world that had once been. The structures in the city, those were buildings where people would live and work. The structures, though, they were so close and tall and crowded together that there was barely enough room for the Gavs to pass between them. The paved ground they were on, that was a road. And up ahead, she recognized a building similar to the orientation disc's images of Terpsichore Station before the planet had gone strange. But this city had other structures built up around and atop the old station, making it the base of the highest building in the center of the city. The one that Brendel had so many thoughts about.
"Who lives up there?"
he asked, arms crossed.
"Your god or your king?"
In response, their captor pointed a blaster at him and growled,
Do not speak ill of the Aratu.
Sounds like both, Brendel murmured, barely loud enough to be heard. The woman glared daggers at him, but didn't shoot him, although she looked like she sorely wanted to. Another curious thing Siv noticed as they slowly navigated the crowds was the proliferation of plants and greenery. They were atop every roof, hanging from every window, and lining every wall.